given us the Honorable Member, as you may know, the chairperson is currently unavailable. He is leading a delegation to China. So in terms of Rule 130, the National Assembly will have to elect a acting chairperson for the session. So Mr. Abram.
I propose that the work be shown by his chair for this meeting.
Any seconder? Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Ms. Twala.
Chapter 5. Can the nominations be repeated for the sake of recording? It was not recorded. All of them, their mics were not on. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Honorable Member. In terms of Rule 130, Honorable Margaret Twala is elected as acting chairperson. I therefore call upon Ms. Twala to come and chair this meeting. Thank you.
Chairperson, I propose that the whip of the committee act as chairperson for this meeting.
Chairperson, I second the proposal. A very good morning to everybody present here today. We have our Minister of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and the Department. Without wasting time, you are all welcome. The agenda in front of us today, I'm sure everybody is having one. In the absence of any hand, we shall resume by asking the minister, because we don't have enough time, to continue with the presentation that was not finished in our last meeting. With the presentation on forests and fisheries. OBP, maize surplus, EPAP 2, new growth path, and the agricultural and fisheries inspector plan. Over to the minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just, before you do start with the briefing, could I ask that you deal with the matter of apologies? Because I, on behalf of the ministry, like to request your permission that the deputy minister leaves early. There is a cabinet economic sector meeting today, and there is a very important item on the agenda, and one of the two of us will have to be represented in that meeting. So if it so be your permission, that he be granted approval to leave this meeting earlier. I so request, Chairperson.
Thank you, the Honorable Minister. We shall consider that and therefore ask our Deputy Minister, Mr. Melder, to start with the presentation. Oh, apologies first. Thank you, Minister, for correcting that. Apologies. Any apologies? Honorable DG?
Also, Chairperson, 140 DG's Ms. Middleton has a doctor's appointment. I would want to ask your indulgence and have her present first on the May settler. So she will be leaving the meeting early because she has a doctor's appointment. So if she could present and then maybe also take the questions and then she can leave afterwards.
Chairperson, we're requesting that the briefing, instead of starting the briefing on OBP, that we start the meeting on the maize surplus, since our DDG, Ms. Sue Middleton, has to leave for a doctor's appointment. So if we could first start with the maize surplus and then do OBP, and then today if we could also brief you on the stud book holders. Stud book breeders, eh? Yeah, so those are actually the three critical ones. If we could deal with those items today, we'll be happy. The IPAP 2 and the new growth path, if we don't have enough time, we could come back and do that as well, as long as members have the documents. But it's very important that members, because members have previously asked what is our job creation strategy, and it's all in the IPAP 2 document as well as in the new growth path. So I hope that members have read the documents and seen that we have worked on the questions. In fact, it was there. I just realized that members haven't read it. I also wanted the members to familiarize them with the energy plan of the country, because the biofuel strategy is part of the energy plan, and biofuel is being coordinated by the Minister of Energy. But if we could do the stud book breeders, OBP, and maize, and start with the maize surplus, I'll be very happy. Thanks, Chairperson.
Members, Mabuse.
Chairperson, I would like to apologize. Before proceeding, I think it will be very important for us, for the chairperson, to inform the department about the whereabouts of the chairperson of the committee.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Apologies. We have this morning these following apologies. The chairperson, Mr. Lulu Johnson, is in China. He is leading a group together with the Environmental Affairs Committee on Climate Change. Another apology is Mr. Bosman, Mr. DiCitello, Ms. DiCitello, and Ms. Gayla. Those are the apologies. Therefore, we shall ask, as per the minister's request, a briefing on maize surplus, because Ms. Middleton has got a doctor's appointment. Over to you, Ms. Middleton. Thank you.
Chair, good morning. If I could request the secretary to enter the password. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, good morning, and thank you very much for indulging that this presentation be taken first. I appreciate it. I'm going to present an overview of the maize surplus situation, how it arose, and some of the strategies that we're currently embarking on. And it, when it comes to questions, I'm also going to request my colleagues to assist me. They've been working with this issue far longer than I have, and they probably have more information than I do. All right, the origins of the maize surplus is comes about as a result of continuous good production outcomes over the past 3 years, which has led to an accumulation of carryover maize stocks in the economy and resulting in a surplus of maize. In addition to favorable weather conditions that we've been experiencing, the varieties of maize that have been planted have produced higher yields per hectare than previously. And globally, maize carryover stocks are also at their highest levels, leading to depressed world prices for maize, as reflected at the Chicago Board on Trade, the CBOT. The surplus production has consequently led to an erosion of local producer prices in relation to import parity. The favorable weather conditions in South Africa and in Southern Africa have further boosted production on the continent, particularly in Zambia and Malawi, where record harvests have been achieved. South Africa used to be a traditional exporter of maize to Southern Africa, and the improved production in that part of the continent has unfortunately displaced our exports into Africa. In addition, the African market is reluctant to buy our maize due to its genetic modification characteristics. Normal exports have therefore been incapable of achieving market balance. The ensuing lower prices have resulted in some farmers not being able to produce maize profitably, and I think this is particularly the case of small-scale black farmers who don't have the economic luxury and financial cushion to hold on to stocks as soon as they're ready for selling, they need to sell. The department, in collaboration with various partners, has explored alternative markets for the surplus maize, including China, Egypt, and Tunisia. But to date, these negotiations have not resulted in commitment for the maize. DAF, in collaboration with the National Agricultural Marketing Council, has worked with the industry to assess the feasibility of establishing an export pool for the surplus maize as a means of stabilizing prices. And the task team, this collective task team, investigating the viability of an export pool, came to the conclusion that an export pool would benefit producers in the short term, but not in the long term, as we had hoped. The reason for this is that once a pool is established, prices would go up and would encourage increased production. This would lead to a cyclical trend and a cyclical increase. But once local prices increase closer to export parity in response to the established pool, our maize will become less competitive in the export markets over the longer term. The pool that we create will create an artificially higher price above the free market price. So the conclusion of this task team is that the industry, the maize industry, needs to develop a long-term strategy to address the situation, rather than dealing with the short-term challenges in an ad hoc manner. The recommendations of the task team for a longer-term strategy, or elements of a longer-term strategy that need to be woven together, is that we need to look at our local market development, and value-adding initiatives. And it's been noted that globally, more yellow maize is demanded than white maize. And so the team has recommended that we develop an aggressive strategy to develop yellow maize and change historical patterns and perceptions of farmers against yellow maize. We need to explore localized markets for our maize. We need to reopen the debate on maize and biofuels, and we need to explore maize and animal feed initiatives, particularly as a strategy to produce more chickens locally and to reduce our imports of chickens. And we need to support increased production of related products such as wheat, soya bean, and sunflowers. We then need to develop an export market development strategy. And African countries use white maize, and we've exported when there have been regional shortages of white maize. In other words, we've responded to a demand pool. Now all African countries have good crops due to increased productivity, and the demand for white maize is down. Deep sea exports to countries such as Korea, Japan, Taiwan, etc., demand yellow maize. And we should match what they want. In other words, we should move from a demand pool situation to a supply push situation. And we need to understand the deep sea export market. We need to be able to move large quantities of maize. And we need to ensure that the product is, there's a consistent supply. A long-term positioning as a net exporter of yellow maize is now essential. The task team is also suggesting that an export agency or trade desk be created. Other recommendations are that the current maize surplus situation will create an avenue to reopen the debate on the use of maize for biofuel, that South Africa should focus on rebalancing the production of yellow versus white maize, that a strategy approach needs to be considered to have a long-term view about the industry value chain, that the surplus maize could be used as feedstock to expand the maize-based downstream industries, and that we seriously need to look at strategies to support black farmers in the maize sector. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Middleton. We shall therefore take hand for questions.
Mama Buza.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I want to raise, I'm happy that the minister and the deputy minister are here. I want to raise the issue of maize. We are talking about oversupply of maize. Meanwhile, people are starving, Honorable Minister. We've got poor people who don't have food. Poor people who sleep with empty stomachs. But we're talking about overproduction of maize. And I also want to be clarified. My understanding, Minister, I've been confused for the past 2-3 months, that the department has established food banks in Gauteng, Durban, Port Elizabeth, and Cape Town, and they are feeding about 84,400 individuals per day. I just want to be clarified, what are food banks, Minister, because I thought food banks are storage of maize for emergencies. And that's what I want to be explained on. And also to say, Minister, for us to be able to deal with hunger, can't we maybe help, I don't know how, help those who sleep without food, than you know what I've raised, Minister. And the other thing that I want to be clarified on, Minister, it's on the issue of biofuels, where you are saying we need to look into biofuels. To say, I need to be educated on this, Minister, to say, if we take the route of biofuels, are our farmers not going to pick up the prices of maize for the good, for their own good? Because once we talk about biofuel, there's no farmer who will go for a cheaper way of selling maize for consumption than going the route of biofuel. Because I'm told that once we start using maize for biofuel, it's going to be expensive. To farmers, it's going to be a very good thing to do. So that's what I want to be clarified on. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Abraham.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, issues like these, you need to take a long-term view. One may be tempted to say that let us look at the possibility of biofuels from maize. If that becomes profitable, I promise you, we will then go the biofuel route and we will have problems with regard to food security. Because, I mean, the staple diet of the people of Africa is maize. So one must be very careful how one looks at this. Comrade Mabuza spoke here about poor people not having food on their table. Did the department perhaps consider buying up maize and storing it so that it has sufficient maize in a sort of a food bank? Did we look at that option? I was once told that, yeah, but you know, we don't have storage facilities. There are silos throughout the country. Many of them half full. You can do a deal. They charge you a certain amount per ton per month to store. So that is you see, Chairperson, sometimes the bureaucrats turn around and give you all the reasons why something cannot be done, instead of finding all the reasons why something must be done. So that, to my mind, is something that I don't buy. If you want to do it, you will find the means to do it. There are many ways of doing it. Whether the department has looked at that. Furthermore, Chairperson, you see, when you have a glut and you are virtually begging markets like China, Egypt, Tunisia, wherever, to buy your maize, there won't be much interest. But of course, if it's available at a price, let's call it next to nothing, there will be an interest. But what we need to do, Chairperson, is look increasingly at value-added products internally, inside South Africa. Your dependence, as far as food issues are concerned, on outside countries, must be limited to the minimum. We must see that we provide our self-sufficiency and that we have a value chain. Now, Ms. Middleton has mentioned here, for example, chicken. Yeah. You know, some time ago, we made a request as members of the Freistaat Cooperatie Beperk, one of the last remaining old-style corporations, which is also now becoming privatized, becoming a company, for a meeting with government which never took place. Precisely because within the area of operation, we have maize producers, we have cattle producers, livestock, sheep, wool, we have soya, we have potatoes, we have a number of commodities within the area that this particular cooperative services. And the cooperative then decided, we are not going to get help from government. Let us do something ourselves. And the cooperative did expensive research as to what can be done to reduce the surplus and utilize it into something worthwhile. The plan now is that in the northeastern Free State, where you would not see a single chicken house, that there would, God willing, be chicken houses. The research has shown that there is a massive market because we are importing chicken in any case. Let us produce it locally. Furthermore, we are, of course, engaged with the cooperative to see that we create black producers of broilers. And I have a document on my table where they are proposing how it can be done. I would like to see government involved in helping those black producers to establish themselves. The cooperative can help in providing all the technical assistance. The cooperative cannot finance them. They need to find finance somewhere. But there is a market, there is a possibility for many of our people to become broiler producers. In the town of Villiers, on the border of Mpumalanga and the Free State, there is a soya oil project being put up at the moment at a cost of 80 million rand. And I may add, Chairperson, that one of our problems is that whilst we want to develop the rural areas, and the initiative is coming from the commercial producer, the problem is at the municipality, where you need to put up abattoirs, where you need to put up cooling facilities, distribution depots, the municipality is unable to provide electricity supply, a guaranteed electricity supply, because they're owing Eskom millions and millions of rands. And I'd like to ask government whether they can do something about it. Because here is an industry going up, everything is in place, all the research has been done, the costing has been done, what it will cost to put up chicken houses, what it will cost to operate, how much maize we'll be using. And then in the town of Frankfort, there is the possibility of a feed factory going up, because you must remember that when you import a kilogram of chicken, you are importing a kilogram and a quarter of maize with it, because that's what it has consumed on the other side where it comes from. So we want to turn that around. So it's an initiative coming from private enterprise. But the government assistance that we need is to see that we can guarantee an electricity supply. Because the abattoir alone and its cleaning processes will provide not short-term jobs like EPWP, but permanent jobs, 650. They are then going to move into the old Limpopo. You have the old Northern Transvaal Corporation, which has been taken over by them, and they plan also to go into the chicken industry there. In Frankfurt, this feed manufacturing plant is being mooted. Again, the problem is electricity. The local authority is unable to guarantee a supply of electricity. So these are the challenges. But I am pleased that private enterprise is doing something towards this. What I'm asking, Chairperson, is when it comes to our resource-poor farmers, those that plant maize for subsistence purposes, but you also have some developing commercial maize farmers who happen to be disadvantaged people. And these people need assistance. They need assistance in the form of input costs. And it's a question that we had asked at the previous portfolio committee meeting, but there was no definitive reply. And Chairperson, you can have most beautiful plans on paper. What is important is what you do on the ground. Are the people on the ground getting the assistance that you are proclaiming on the screen? Those people must be helped to see that they get assistance in terms of input costs, etc., etc. And I want to make it very clear, Chairperson, our people are not beggars. They're not asking for handouts, but they are asking for assistance at a cheap interest rate, which they are willing to pay back. And there are many of them that are prepared to do that. Finally, Chairperson, South Africa is currently importing 55,000 kilograms of beef. We are importing that. And I think it's acknowledged in Ms. Middleton's document. Now, Chairperson, you see, you know, I come from a background where I'm a doer. I like to see things done, not talk about it. I'm challenging the government that South Africa is not a country blessed with a lot of arable soil. Over 80% of our land is not suitable for cultivating purposes. We can go out there and help our people to improve the genetic quality of their cattle, particularly in the former homelands, where the genetic quality is poor, and therefore we are not producing the kilograms of meat per capita that we are able to produce in the commercial areas. Person, may I help you? You see, I'm saying that we must use the maize, create maize meal and other products, and feed cattle and make meat out of that, so that we can help to utilize the surplus that we have. And my challenge to the government is, we have people in the rural areas who are on farms. We have people who have been allocated farms, but there's nothing happening there. We can start livestock farming there, assist those people to develop viable commercial herds of cattle, and in that way create the necessary weeders to be fattened through feedlots. You can create cooperative feedlots. The people out there are crying out for help. It can be done, Jefferson. The word impossible does not exist. It can be done. We need to have the will. We need to have dedicated, committed members of the public service who are prepared to take the hand of these people and walk the road with them. And in that way, Jefferson, we can not totally wipe out surpluses, but we can make a major dent in the surpluses and be lesser dependent on imports. We are today, Chairperson, also importing a lot of dairy products. And that is another field where we can do a great deal. One of these fine days, Chairperson, you will find that you will be paying 100 rand a kilo for mutton, because many sheep farmers are getting out of sheep farming for two reasons. The one is that it's an easy takeaway, it gets stolen very easily, and the other reason is that we have the predators that are stealing them, and we need to help our farming community to see that we arrest these things and create a market for the products that we produce here, which can in turn turn to something that we don't have to import anymore. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and sorry that I'm a bit long-winded.
Thank you, Ndada Pram. Thank you. I still need this clarity on the food banks and the silos. What is the difference there? Mapidusa.
Chairperson, thank you. Fortunately, some of the question I wanted to ask already been asked, but I just want clarity on page 3. Bulletin 2. Vice versa bulletin 3. I don't understand, unless I get clarity, that where is it? South Africa used to be a traditional exporter of maize to Southern Africa. And that the bulletin 3, it says, in addition, the African market is reluctant to buy our maize due to its genetic modification nature. What I don't understand is that bulletin 2, it says, South Africa used to be a traditional supporter. I just want to find out that time when South Africa was a traditional supporter of Southern Africa, yeah, the exporter. Yes, thank you. The genetic, what they are worried about now, what was not there before, the genetic modification nature. I don't understand that. Just
need clarity
on that.
Mama, an additional question? Then that will be the last one for this round.
The last one. Minister, I've got a problem that I've been raising with the Department of Genetic Food. To say, does it not contribute to this clumpy stomach that we see these days? Minister, if you can check. A lot of people who are from the rural areas, they don't develop those clumpy, big stomachs. It's because they eat organic food. And maybe that I'm told that there's a policy draft document on organic food. To say, does it not contribute to the way our children are growing? Our children are developing, a huge structure and check with those who are older. They don't develop those stomachs. I don't know how to put it, but does it not contribute to what is happening right now?
Those were the questions. Over to the department.
I think the question, one of the questions that came out was around the surplus maize and surplus hunger from Member Bush. Indeed, this is a dilemma that we have. The issue, though, is that at the present in South Africa, the maize is underpinned by the market considerations. And therefore, much as there is surplus hunger, it is not easy for us. We cannot force the farmers to make this food available because they are in farming for profit, not for social development. So that is the first problem we have. What we need to do is to find a way where we can match the food production, the market for food production, as well as addressing the question of hunger. This was something that we therefore were thinking of having two approaches to the matter. The one is to help what I said commercial agriculture to have a market for their products. We've been working on it, but we want to separate that from the issue of having a guaranteed market for maize products. That's what we want to deal with and work with regard to smallholder farmers. We are saying that we want to foresee smallholder farmers as the farmers that will help us to solve hunger, okay? Because they need the market, they need more government support and more government institutional support than the commercial farmers. Now, this is a discussion that we're having. There is a team, Dr. Schitter is here, who are working together with social development to establish the kind of institutional mechanism that will ensure that smallholder farmers who are battling their market will be the principal solvers of the hunger question. And that the commercial guys who've got insurance, who've got all sorts of protection when there's a market glut, that those ones will help them get market. So we're trying to move on a number of legs and achieve a number of outcomes. So we are not taking the, because if you go to the obvious route of saying that because there's surplus means, we should demand that this means be channeled to the poor, or to do what Honorable Abraham reads, that we should buy this. We think that we don't get the most efficient solution of those capitalism. Let's find a way in which the commercial guys who can stand on their feet with regard to market mechanism and market failure are assisted to get market, but we work with smallholder guys and direct them to what we call state market that can make this easier. So we're still working on the institutional mechanism of this, and there's a team that's working on this thing in the department. It's not an easy thing to do. So that is the first thing. The second question is on the food banks and silos. Firstly, to clarify, there are no food banks that are present by government, that are managed by the government. No. What you have with regard to food banks are social movements or NGO initiatives. There's what we call Food Bank South Africa, which is part of a World Food Bank Network that was started in the United States. They have offices in South Africa. What they are dealing with is not only restricted to maize. They are dealing with all sorts of surplus kinds of food. For instance, if Checkers has not sold up all of its fresh food, let's say, tinned food, etc., etc., they have negotiated an arrangement with Checkers and other places to say, if you've got surplus food that you have not a market for, please sell it to us cheaply or give it to us, and we will ensure that it is accessed by the poor. So that's an NGO experiment. Now, we're looking at that. In our attempt to address food security, food banks will also have a part to play on that. But again, the modalities of that are still being looked at. The issue of silos, I think there are silos. I think there are silos in the Northwest. There are silos in the former Transkei. And these silos are not fully optimally used. Okay? We were looking at them. The proposal for Askiza Eastern Cape around the revitalization of one of the silos in Patawas, that could be used as a storage. Now, we will use those ones for smallholder farmers. So those smallholder farmers can access those silos and then can be twinned in this attempt we're doing of ensuring that we've got a government market, such as prisons as well as old age pensioners who can then be able to buy these things and support and give a market to smallholder farmers. So that's what we're saying around silos. So we're looking at silos. But those ones will be primarily for use for smallholder farmers in the planning for the food security initiatives that we're working on. The issue of biofuels, I think we are answering this thing maybe for the third time to the portfolio committee, but again, we will answer it. What you are saying, when we're opening up the discussion on biofuel as a possible policy option, and one of the elements in our energy mix in the country, we are saying that it will involve not less regulation, but more regulation. Okay? If we're going to open up maize or any other plants or food plants for as an input into biofuels, we have got to protect the country from food insecurity. Therefore, we have to have farmer policies to restrict certain percentages of land to only produce for the food market, to ensure that there are proper quotas, proper regulatory mechanisms that do not compromise food security. But we have to talk to the issue of surplus. And biofuels is one element that can be used to ensure that our farmers do not battle for markets as they're doing right now. So we have to explore the use of biofuels as another mechanism that can absorb this surplus money that we're dealing with. So we're considering this, but we want to emphasize and to underscore this. It will mean more regulation so as to safeguard our own national food security. So that's the other issue we're focusing on that one. I think I've answered even some of the questions that Mr. Abrams. Now, on the issue of the what you were raising, Honorable Abrams, about food stocks and about initiatives in some of the towns in the free state around agro-processing. Okay? What we want to say on that one, we welcome those initiatives. I think those are very good initiatives. They fall in line with an initiative we've already done. We have, in the light of the maize, few of this maize surplus, we called on the NAMC to convene a meeting of all the stakeholders on the food chain. People who are doing chicken feed, everyone who's involved in it. Okay, we've called them for a meeting, this meeting was organized by the NAMC and the Competition Commission. Because the Competition Commission has been saying that it doesn't want an easy way out for farmers. Okay? Let's see whether when the market forces prices down, should that not be benefiting downstream industries. So there has been a consultation around this. So it's something therefore that we're keen on, and we are working with stakeholders who have got an interest in cheaper maize prices, which will make it as able to get to build a chicken industry. We agree with you. We import 40% of our chicken from Brazil. It's not something we're interested in. We don't want to do that. Okay? And we also believe that if we've got a proper chicken industry, if what meat is relatively expensive, okay, chicken is cheaper, and most working people can buy chicken. And if we can bring more price of chicken down, it means most South Africans will be food secure because they'll be able to buy a cheap source of protein, which is chicken. So we are supportive of such an initiative. So we do not have problems in moving in that direction. So we will be supporting you. On the issue now that you've also mentioned about the smallholder farmers that have been affected by the maize surplus, we've organized a meeting. Their representative is going to be coming to our oversight. We know that about 157 of them, we are working out. But we have said that we don't just want to give them guns because we're moving away from gun funding. We want them to be given loans so that they can plant in the next season. But just to say, I think in conclusion, that we continue to look for many other markets for me. And it's an ongoing work, and we hope soon that something will come out of those negotiations. We're looking all over the world because we've got to secure the market for our farmers. The issue of electricity that you're talking about is indeed a challenge. We cannot say that there is the answers to it, but we need, that's why we want to try some of these things from the center, so that they can be protected for some of the vicissitudes of local problems. So we are hoping that in giving the kind of support we'll be giving to all these initiatives, we'll be driving somewhere, even the commitments, we'll have to negotiate the commitments of some of these things, maybe with ESCOM at a national level. But I will leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think that, firstly, I am urging members to read the documents that we give them so that they don't say that we're just talking, but that they can actually see in which direction the country is going. Now, there's a huge policy shift in our country, and members need to understand what it is we are doing in the new growth path strategy and what it is we are doing with the industrial policy action plan. And without the new growth path strategy, agriculture is part of the economic development sector. And we have certain outcomes and outputs, which as a sector we have committed with the president in terms of our delivery agreement and our performance agreement. I'd like us to come to you to present to you the minister's performance agreement with the president, as well as the delivery agreement we have formed with stakeholders. Members are going to have to be patient with us in terms of presenting to you what it is government is doing. It's not a talk shop. It's the government which is re-engineering its resources. It's the government which is re-engineering its policies. And as a portfolio committee, the members need to familiarize themselves and need to know what it is that cabinet and government is doing. And I urge members to be on top of what it is that is happening. So the first response I'd like to get is around food security. We had a food security workshop. Unfortunately, members could not attend. Now, if members had attended that food security workshop, what we have developed there is an intersectoral, interministerial committee, which consists of social services, education, health, public works, economic development, DTI, and rural development. Rural development is the department that looks at electricity and off-farm infrastructure. Agriculture looks at on-farm infrastructure, such as windmills, irrigation, etc. Public works also comes in to look at the development of infrastructure. There are 12 outcomes of government. Peter, at some stage, you must take the committee through those 12 outcomes because it's clear that they haven't seen those 12 outcomes. Those 12 outcomes give us responsibilities as different departments in rural areas and as it pertains to smallholder farmers in particular. Now, in us opening up the discussion, we are ensuring that other departments place emphasis on agriculture. In the new growth path strategy, agriculture is the second most important sector for job creation and the growth for our economy in our country. The first most important sector is infrastructure. After infrastructure comes agro-processing driven by DTI and agriculture. Now, in the past, agro-processing was seen as predominantly a DTI function. We are not talking, but now we are saying agriculture has a central role to play in agro-processing. In the past, agriculture was responsible for the primary production of food, and the downstream activities, or lower down the value chain, became the responsibility of DTI and economic development. The new growth path, as well as IPAC 2 document, commits us to working in synergy and working less in silos. So, DTI has an agro-processing unit, which is more senior, and at a more senior level, they have a DDG agro-processing. Whereas agro-processing in agriculture is at a lower level. The new growth path now makes it incumbent on us to place agro-processing at a higher priority level when it comes to food security. Now, in line with this, agro-processing now immediately says to us that maize should not be sold in its primary state, but that there have to be downstream activities, or maize should now go through the entire value chain. Value addition to maize is important. And that is why our agreement with the Chinese government is not whether it is a success or failure, whether they're going to buy the maize or not. Our agreement with the Chinese government is to say that they will help us with the funding of the agro-processing of maize, or the downstream activities, so that we can turn that maize into cattle feed and turn that maize into chicken feed. Agriculture alone cannot control the import and export of food. It is DTI and economic development that controls import and export tariffs. I think the committee must understand who does what in government, so that they don't just sit and expect agriculture to do everything. We are working with other government departments to solve certain critical areas in agriculture. And that is why we are now working with DTI and economic development to look at import and export tariffs. Because the import and export tariffs that we have as a country favors the importation of cheap chickens into our country. And therefore, looking at that import and export tariffs, we do not have control over it as the agriculture department, but we're working with our sister government departments to channel those import and export tariffs, so that indeed our country does not become vulnerable to the cheap production of chicken in other countries which are subsidizing their chicken production. So I don't think we must take things in isolation and then just chastise the department and just criticize and criticize. We must see things in totality. And we are not just having a talk shop. We are indeed working to make sure that there's overall transformation and change in the sector. So we are protecting our country against food insecurity by firstly supporting small-scale farmers or smallholder farmers. For this, the transformation of land bank, we have just signed a memorandum to cabinet, which will come to the next cabinet, where land bank, and if you listened to the budget speech of the Minister of Finance, in that budget speech, he announced the recapitalization of the land bank by 3 billion rand over the next 3 years. And the recapitalization of land bank is so that we can provide cheap finance at a lower interest rate and payable over a longer period of time. That was a complaint we made. It's not just a talk shop. We are acting on it. We are acting on it by getting cheaper finance from the Chinese Development Bank. That's also a success story from China. We don't just go on trips. We can show you deliverables after those trips. The Chinese Vice Minister of Agriculture was here to further engage on the bilateral agreement we signed with the Chinese government. That bilateral agreement, we can give you copies of. Before you go on recess, we'd even like to give you a progress report on all our overseas trips or all our international agreements which we have signed. There's movement now. Whereas previously, international agreements stood on shelves and gathered dust. Now we are acting upon international agreements. We are also arranging with Egypt that because they have opposite seasons, when Egypt is out of season, they will take our maize. And that was our trip to Egypt to agree with the Egyptian government on the broadening of markets to the Middle East, so that via Egypt, we can export agricultural products to the Middle East. We have also agreed with Egypt that we will shorten the trade route instead of going 54 days via the Indian Ocean, no, the Atlantic Ocean. We will export food to Egypt in 14 days via the Indian Ocean, and Egypt will subsidize the route, so that we can have better markets for our smallholder farmers. How does this impact on food security and maize? Because there's a maize surplus, even Tanzania now has a maize surplus. Other African countries have the right to say that they do not accept genetically modified maize. The GMOs, certain countries have restrictions on GMOs. Now, because there are 4 countries which have a surplus of maize in Africa, it becomes difficult for us to sell our maize in the continent. And therefore, we are absolutely saying, let us add value to that maize. The maize or the surplus which we seek to sell is not going to impact on food security, because the surplus is that maize after we need as a country, how many million tons? 9.5 million tons. So we keep the 9.5 million tons for food security so that our country doesn't run out of maize. And after the 9.5 million tons, we have this 4.5 million tons in surplus. And that is why we call it a surplus, because it's more than what we require as a country. Now, we can buy that surplus as a country. But right now, if we buy that surplus, it impacts on the price of food and the price of maize, because government then becomes an artificial buyer on the market. It will then distort the market prices of maize. Instead, if members have read the newspapers of yesterday, you would see that we're working with a competition commission on companies which have unfairly monopolized the prices of food and bread. Pioneer Foods, we have slapped with a fine because of monopolizing the price of bread and flour. We cannot bring in an artificial price for bread. They are going to reduce the price of bread because they've inflated the price of bread. But if we reduce the price of bread too suddenly, it means that the small bakeries will be out of business. And thus, we are reducing the price of bread in line with reducing the price of flour. So our intervention in the economy for food security is not just a talk shop. It is happening. We are now in ability, once we do this agro-processing, which IPAP 2 commits us to do, and the new growth path strategy commits us to do, we will now be able to create more feedlots for cattle or for beef, as well as for poultry. I think that I've spoken about the loans. To also give farmers loans over a long period of time at a low interest rate, we are working with the Chinese Development Bank, IFAD, the International Fund for Agriculture Development, which is a United Nations Rome-based organization. They are working with South Africa for the first time in its history. They are absolutely delighted to see the policy direction change in our country, which now says focus on smallholder farming. And for the first time, IFAD is willing to fund smallholder farmers with cheap funding. And that is what Honorable Member Abram has been cried out for a long time. Honorable Member Abram, we don't have quick fix solutions. What we are doing is having thorough solutions to problems which have been there for a very long time. We are also developing a one-stop shop model where instead of smallholder farmers going to Mafisa, Ilima Letsema, CASP, they go just to one center and the money is then available for them in one center. And that's cutting down the cumbersome bureaucratic process that you're talking about. There indeed is change in the bureaucracy. I don't think we should just come every time and criticize the bureaucracy without noting the changes which are happening. Yes, there are problems, but I think there are enough problems. There are more than enough problems, but it isn't necessary for us to be cynical and to just see the bad. There are new good things happening. The one-stop shop is one of that, and it's been driven by our department. We cannot continue just bashing our officials. What is the difference between food banks and silos? The silos in the past catered only for commercial white farmers. We are now entering into contracts with those silos to also keep the maize or store the maize of smallholder farmers. And food banks, it's a program, as the DG says, we are doing in conjunction with the NGOs and with the banks, Old Mutual, the one that's run by a son, Crispin Son, Old Mutual is the coordinator of the food banks. The food banks coordinate the companies like Pick and Pay, all other companies, the private sector, together with government and the NGOs, to make sure that, as I spoke to you about those government departments, social services, education, health, public works, they are our outlets. Social services are helping us now with outlets such as soup kitchens, and social services was also then going to help us whereas we bought food parcels, we bought the contents of these food parcels at very high prices. With social services, that's the Brazilian model for food security that we're following, where you buy food closer to its development and where you buy food from the smallholder sector. We should give the committee members a presentation of the Brazilian model of food banks and food security as well. When it comes to the improving the genetic capacity of cattle, I think we need to leave that for the presentation on the stud book breeders. We are doing things, we are not just talking about it. There's a better relationship now between DTI as well as the Department of Economic Development on especially import and export tariffs, and how subsidized agricultural products in other countries impact on agriculture in South Africa. This committee spoke about it, you complained about it, we are doing something about it. We are not just complaining, we are doing something about it. The electricity supply, this is the work of rural development, and the government assistance in local government is a program which is driven by rural development. It's part of their outcomes and their performance agreement, which they signed with the president. Specific projects, we also work with our provincial departments, because the national department cannot get involved in each and every specific project which the members identify. It is better that the provincial department has a closer contact with each and every project. So the Frankfurt project, national cannot have the capacity to zoom in from national into each and every small project. We are asking our provincial departments to be our contact, and building the capacity of the provincial departments would be the next round of focus of our national department. We have acknowledged that we haven't had sufficient interaction with provincial HODs, and our DG, you know, has been appointed recently. His next set of priorities will be to interact with provincial departments. Storage facilities, here again, with public works, because agro-processing is now government's second priority for growth in our economy, we are working with public works for irrigation facilities, storage facilities, and the logistical aspects of the entire value chain of agriculture. I think I try to, if there's areas which I have not, oh, I said that Tanzania also has a surplus. On the matter of biofuel, honorable members, I would please beg the honorable members to engage with the portfolio committee on energy. because that is the committee which is driving the policy on the energy supply of our country. The Department of Energy has a document. I ask that we get that document, Ms. Buffett. I ask that you get that for the members, where they are now talking about green energy. For now, the focus is on solar energy as well as wind energy. We have to make sure that we put biofuel on the agenda, as well as the biofuel mix when it comes to the supply of petrol or diesel. The state must legislate the biofuel mix. And it's not agriculture that is going to do that. It's the Department of Energy Affairs. So farmers who are bashing and bashing agriculture, I think you are knocking on the wrong door. Agriculture is already lobbying for farmers where we look at maize for biofuel. But the final decision is not only agriculture's decision. The Department of Energy is going to decide on the biofuel mix. So I'm begging this committee to also interact with the committee and the Department of Energy, particularly with regards to biofuel. Our biofuel strategy as a country is still to first protect food security. So we're starting with food security before we are speaking about biodiesel and biofuel. So there are other crops which we have prioritized for biofuel. It is only because of the surplus of maize that we are saying, let's revisit the debate of using surplus maize for biofuel. Thank you, Chairperson. Bye.
Thank you, Minister.
Chairperson, my deputy also had some comments.
Over to the deputy minister.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a few comments to add, if you don't mind. Number one, I think I would really like to welcome the whole Free State Initiative, and as I said, being done in Limpopo as well. I firmly believe that a lot of problems can more easily be solved on the local level, where people know the local problems. We even talk about land problems, food security problems, and surely government must play a role to enable it. But I think that's a very good initiative. And my experience as I move around in the country is that there's a lot of goodwill still out there, and that we must use that to solve these problems. I know the problems with electricity, and from my experience again, it's most of the site, local government, not being paid by government departments, not be able to pay ESCOM, and then ESCOM asks money again from government to go on there, and it's the bad circle. And in the end, I really think we can solve it administratively because it's so important. When I talk about the maize surplus, there's a lot of consequences. One big problem being that we've got the surplus of the previous year as well, and now we add this another one on, and we're running into more and more problems all the time. And these African countries at the moment are producing their own. There's a lot of reasons for that. One is that some of our farmers are farming there, and Zimbabwe farmers, and we must accept that as well. But my big problem being that because of the surplus, some of the commercial farmers and the small farmers are getting bankrupt. And if we talk about rural development, they are moving out again, and it's a bad circle. So we must solve that problem to one other side. Interesting, I spoke to some of the people of United Nations Food Security, and they buy some of it. That's one way of trying to solve it. One comment maybe on biofuels. I think we must allow the debate and the investigation to start and to continue with it. Exactly what you said. If prices are going to rise, becoming more expensive, then it's a mistake. But on the other side, with green energy, if you look at Brazil, they're very successful in the way they use biofuels and balance the two, and I think we can learn from that. It will be a mistake to base the biofuel industry on the surplus of maize, because that may change in 2-3 years, and then it's up and down, and then we're in trouble again. And even on that side, I think it can succeed in South Africa with the right balances, but it might be a Southern African initiative, and then also adding other commodities, sugarcane and all those, to make it a much bigger energy solution for the long term, then it can solve some of these problems. And let's try and see and let the investigation go, let the debate go, and add all these things that you're worried about, because it will be a mistake if we go for this and the end food prices rise, and then we haven't solved any problems. Thank you, sir.
All right.
noted the digits.
I just wanted to say that, for instance, on the issue of the one-stop shop, and I think broadly the members can agree that it is in the right direction, where we can offer cheap credit and we can centralize, because we've seen that the grant system is not working. It's got all sorts of problems. But because the decision doesn't lie with us, we are having challenges with other departments that must give a go ahead on this. I don't want to mention first department, but I would like to speak to you, Acting Chair, to tell to speak to other colleagues who have got oversight in other departments to allow us to move. They have some of blockers. So even if we want to move ahead, if there's a certain department that they got has to input in the decision and they don't agree with you, you cannot move much. And I think sometimes members are not aware of some of the challenges that we have experienced as bureaucrats. So I just wanted to alert about there is a letter now that says, oh guys, you can't go ahead with this because of this reason. So that again is gonna frustrate our willingness and our commitment to serve particularly smallholder farmers. But hopefully that doesn't affect the CPDO that the minister is mentioning. But it affects the broader cast consolidation that we're aiming for. I just wanted to share that with members. The second thing, the other question, the last one, is the question that Umama asked about the GMOs in Southern Africa. I think that there's a broad awareness even if the maize that we're exporting in the past had GMOs, but today there's more awareness around the challenges of GMOs. And going forward, as the middle class even increases in other parts of the world, in China, everywhere else, they will have, well, there are debates around GMO. I'm not saying that those debates are correct or not. I'm not taking a stance on it. But there are people who are questioning the other issues around GMOs, as whether is it the right way, are they safe, etc., etc. So we have, again, those who've got influence on our own commercial farmers must help us engage in a dialogue on the sustainability of GMO production in the long term. Because as I'm saying, in India and China, we'll have about 1 billion middle class people in the next 10 years. Okay? They will have these questions. Well, some of these are middle class questions. So and that's the market we're aiming for. So we need to talk to them for that, whether is it wise that we continue in this path. But again, it's up to farmers to take the decision. We can only advise, particularly the commercial farmers. Just wanted to leave it there.
Were all the questions answered? Follow up.
Just before the member, you know, the cabinet is just talk of ministers all the time. Apologies. Honourable Member Mabuza spoke about the complexities of having GMOs in our country. Honourable Member, the team that I spoke to, the interministerial committee, our mandate is to look at food security, food safety, as well as food nutrition. And part of food nutrition is to say, what is the impact of the diet on a working class child, a middle class child, and a rural child, as well as an urban child. Once we have developed sufficient work on food security, we'll be able to come back to the members on food security as well. But that we are convinced that in January, February, we'll be able to have sufficient work done to brief the members on food security, food safety, and food nutrition in our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. And thank you for the comprehensive explanation that you have presented to us. And also, I would like to assure the Minister that this committee is doing its level best to be on top of the situation, to familiarize itself with what the government is doing. This is what this committee is doing. And also, whilst it is doing all that, this committee, as public representatives, we are worried about the alarming level of the poverty. You know, there are villages where when we enter there, you just see poverty. You see nothing else but poverty. When you enter a house, you'll find a panel stove there, nothing else. That is why the committee is concerned about the surplus, whilst poverty is at its highest level. Now, I just wanted to say that. Ma'am Mabuza, Ma'am Miriam.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Honorable Minister, if you go through the summary report of BRRR, it is clearly stated in that document, that is an annual report, that you have established 4 food banks. And if it's not the responsibility of government, why is it in the annual report? Secondly, Minister, on food security. In one of the meetings, we were told that there's no policy on food security, that the provinces are doing their own thing and national government is doing its own thing. Minister, I just want to assure you, on my side, I do my reading. I question where there's no thorough explanation. I question where there are general answers. I don't agree to each and everything that I'm told here, even if I'm not satisfied that the answer that has been given, I'm satisfied with. I'm not a type of complaining. I don't complain. And I've never said, my minister, that there's a talk show. Never. If we engage, we engage, because I'm representing people here. I'm here on behalf of the people, and I must understand so that I can take back whatever I get from the department. So officials should learn not to give us general questions, general answers. They must give us specific answers that we want. DG, I'm sure you will give us, I'm not saying you were part of what, but I don't go for general question answers, Minister. I want proper answers that I will be able to give people down there. Whatever we query here and whatever we raise here, we're not complaining. We want to know and we want to assist where possible. Your failure as a minister, as a woman, is my failure. The failure of this department is the failure of the ANC government. And there's no way that minister can come here and think that it's just a talk show. Never. That's what I want to correct, that I'm doing my work. And everybody who's here, who's member of parliament, is doing his or her work. That's why we'll come here and raise. But if we are not given correct answers, we'll keep on. The two of us, we went to food summit in the end room. Maputo laid out their plan on food security. And I understood that their plan properly. But when we come to South Africa, the hotel, there's no policy in province admin. That's why we're making a follow-up DG. We want to understand. We are not rubber stamps, and I'm not ready to agree on issues that I don't agree to. Thank you.
Ma'am Miriam, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this opportunity. I also want to thank the presenter. I would like clarity on whether do we have a feasibility study on exploring the local market of on page 6 of biofuel. Do we have a feasibility study as in agriculture? That's the first one.
Sorry?
6. Yes. Explore localized, that's the second bullet. Localized markets and biofuels and animal feed. Members have covered me in terms of the importation and also in terms of the poverty in the country. What I also want to know is the free market system. Are we saying that we want to phase out the free market system while we are still sitting with the unresolved poverty in the country? A minister, I also want to say, Honorable Minister Ndidi, the pink file we are having here, is it right? I think this one, yes.
whether it's red or pink, but a file in front of us. This file arrived yesterday, and on a Monday, we are on in constituencies. We are in constituencies. So to my information, in the office where I am serving, this arrived yesterday in my office. So I just want to bring that under your attention, Honorable Minister. We would like a DG. I want to align myself with Uma Mumabuz that we are worried about the poverty in our constituency, the drought, the surplus maize. We thought the food bank's answer would give us an answer of saying that maybe some of the surplus maize are also solving for us, and in the interim, the problem of hunger in our rural constituencies. I won't say much because I'm covered by the other members, but really, we would like if you answer us, give us a direct answer, DG. We know there are cabinet plans, but if those plans are not in front of us yet, we will answer. We will ask questions. And the day of the establishment of the forum, we had public hearings as this portfolio in Parliament. And we had small farmers and commercial farmers. And both were complaining, especially, very seriously, the smallholder farmers of the chickens. So we had a reason to be up in arms in asking questions to the department with the contradiction of the annual reports and what we are getting afterwards. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama Miriam. Noted, Ntate Abraham. Maybe to be more, just to clarify my mind also that we heard here today that commercial farmers are interested in profit, and the government is concentrating on emerging farmers who should, in future, take care of the food security. This is the statement that you get. That whilst the government is still, because that is a process, it's not an overnight thing to happen. Small emerging farmers, we know that they are still struggling, especially with the drought, with the climate change that is affecting us all. Now, it's still a process. Whilst there is this food surplus that is there and the poverty. So that's where now the contradiction is to me. Thank you. Dr. Abraham.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a lot has been said in follow-up questions. But I just want to refer to this report here. I'm sure that the department still owns it, the annual report of the department. On page 36, it says here, they talk of targets in terms of agricultural production. And they say here, 4 food banks have been launched to date in Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, and Port Elizabeth. The current operations of the food banks provide meals for about 84,800 individuals per day. Now, Chairperson, that's what the report says. Not us. This is what the annual report says. And here we are told something else. But all I want to make clear here, Chairperson, is, you know, my late father, I pray for him every day. He taught me something. He said that, you know who is your friend? The one that points out your faults and your mistakes is your friend. And the one that will say, hey, my boy, well done, well done, well done, that is not your friend. Our job here, Chairperson, is not to come along here and say that, hey, department, you're doing an excellent job. And I don't say that all the bureaucrats are bad people. You have thousands of them that are excellent people, but you have many more thousands that may not be, that are dropping us on a daily basis. And we need to say that. Furthermore, Chairperson, you see, transformation of the land bank. If you want the land bank to continue making a profit and continue maintaining its infrastructure, that is its officials, and continue rendering a service to the farming sector, albeit the commercial sector, then it will have to make a profit in order to do so. It cannot make a profit if it has to obtain funds from the commercial market and compete with other commercial banks. What we need, and I hope that this 3 million recapitalization, a billion, I hope, it is not meant for the land bank to remain afloat and carry on the business that it is carrying on, because then it cannot assist the small farmer. It cannot. You can't expect somebody to borrow money at competitive rates outside and go and give it out at a subsidized rate, unless the government gives it a dedicated fund and says that this amount of money is dedicated to uplift the new farmer, the developing farmer, the smallholder farmer. Furthermore, Chairperson, yes, I think Mama Mabuza has made it very clear, and I want to emphasize that we're not superhuman beings. We are given documents yesterday, thick documents like this, that we are supposed to read by this morning. It's a bit difficult, you know. I'm 70 years old. I cannot do what I used to do when I was 20 years old. Read a whole book through the whole night. So, unfortunately, it is difficult. But then, to Jefferson, whatever we can glean out of this, we glean out of it. And we make our contribution. And when we are critical, Jefferson, because history, yeah, and I've been on this committee for about 10 years on agriculture and the previous land affairs, for 10 years, Chair. In 10 years, I have heard so many turnaround strategies. I've learned about so many things that I was told. And when I go back to the ground, precious little had happened. And I think the minister must admit, and the minister herself complained in an article in the Landbou Weekblad about some of her officials that she cannot trust. The minister said it, not me. And it's in the Landbou Weekblad. It was not retracted. So I accept that there are certain officials that you can't trust. And nor would I trust them, because, I mean, if the minister doesn't trust them, how can I? Chairperson, yes, we've got this new growth path. Let me remind you, we had deer, we had Azgiza. Each one of them promised that we will be creating 500,000 new jobs per annum. Each one of them promised it. And what is the history, Jefferson? I always say you are not judged by what you say you are going to do. Because talk is cheap, but money buys the whiskey. You are judged by what you've already done. And what the department has already done is that agriculture has lost hundreds of thousands of jobs in the last 10 years. Azgiza, GEA did not bring those desired results. And where is the problem, Chair? The problem is we've got to see to it that we have absolute buy-in from the entire economy of this country. You must get people to buy in whatever plans you have. And you must have the dedicated official. And that official must be empowered in order to carry out those tasks. Now, Chairperson, we are sitting in our country with thousands of hectares of land that can be irrigated. It is not being irrigated. one of the fastest ways of empowering people. But it will require a great deal of infrastructural development, creation of markets, and we haven't even exploited the South African market. You take our supermarkets, Chairperson, where do they source all their veggies from? Not everything from South Africa. It comes from beyond the borders of this country. You will see fresh mark trucks in Mozambique. If you are traveling further, you'll see them there too. Do we have the required extension officers with the experience and the expertise to do the work? We don't. Either of certain divisions in the Department of Agriculture, where one official, has to carry out the work of a half a dozen people. You cannot win in that way, Chairperson. And that is why we say that in order to achieve what you have set out to achieve, the goals are noble, but you need the necessary human capital in order to achieve those goals. And you need the buy-in of the total South African population, the economy especially, in order to make those things work. In conclusion, Chairperson, we are not here to fight anybody for the sake of fighting. We are here to fight a cause. And our cause is to see that South Africa comes out tops. That is our cause. And if we are critical, I believe that if you're in politics, you must be an animal. You must be prepared to take kicks, and you must be prepared to give kicks. That's politics. You're in the hurly-burly of politics. In politics, you must not expect bouquets. You must expect brickbats. And I'm a politician. I'm prepared for it. So, Chairperson, we will watch the department. We will give it the cooperation that it requires. But I also want to say this, Chair. The minister mentioned that we were not present at a food security summit. Now, I checked out with some of my comrades here. They never saw an invite, nor did I see one. I was not invited to such a summit. I know nothing about it. So, I think that there is a communications gap. If we get the invitation, and we find it important enough, we'll make time to be there. Sometimes we do it at our own cost. We don't want to be treated like VIPs. We're ordinary people. We are willing to do it. But then, Chairperson, we mustn't be blamed for not being there because we were not advised. And I want to ask the Minister to explain to us whether this 3 billion rand capitalization of the land bank is going to be available to the small people, the developing farmer, the smallholder farmer, at an extremely subsidized rental, yes or no. If it is, what is the process to be followed so that we can tell the people on the ground that this dedicated funding is available? And I agree with the DG. Nobody wants handouts. And we shouldn't give handouts because then they're not appreciated. But give the people that want to do something, Chairperson, give them money at a subsidized rate so that that person can do something and show you that they can pay back after they've done whatever they have to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dada Brown. Dada Dolo and then Mama Miriam wants to add something. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Comrade Chairperson. And also congratulations, Comrade Zita, to the General. I'm so happy, Comrade Zita, do well. Don't make a mistake, you know. And thank you very much. Chairperson. I will frag for Minister. And you see, exceed rural development, weak economy, and social condition in rural area. You have a poor, the fruit is also a candle to it. But you don't have to cut down. I think if you will say South Africa, you will say South Africa, part from. That's a Kukuni district for a double. You bet the vorige regering, hulle het gemaakt die mensen bij de rural area elam de die elle kind land ploeg hulle het so gemaak dis kukuni dat is hier mabulol streikral en die plek die mense het dit so gemaak nou hulle ploeg nie meer hoekom daar die en mag my kop heel te mal je wat altijd onze dat gedenk bij die locatie die er mensen les bij die dorp misschien een krever, kalver, komkos kan komen. En als het rural area, dat is niet werk mee. Maar die dingen wat met kop staan, hoe komt van 1994 tot vandaag, dat wordt niet meer geploeg worden. Nou, ik wil weten hoe komt. En met die tweede ding, minister, daar is het, dit was mensen wat onder landbouw om de rural area daar op en af gegaan het. Als ze krijgen je geest en het abort lees, ze vangen je. Maar in je tijd, je krijgt die beesten in rural area en het abort lees die de oren toe. En je kan nog nooit niet zien, een van het departement daar zo kijkt en hierdie ding is nie goed en so. Hoe kom dit so gebeur, minister? Die ander ding, minister, ek weet die environmental affairs en tourism, ek denk, miskien as jylle kan sam met jylle praat, minister, jy weet as ons een klein was, die rural area, die groot rivier, ons het die vis daar gevang het, maar hierdie tijd, die vis in die water, gaan hulle dood. Die mense wat hulle drink. Jy weet, die tabule, jy sien net die bottle, hulle gooi hom, en die rafiel, dis a bottle, jy weet, die vis kan dood. Jy weet, die mense drink, gooi net enige plek uit. Maar wat ek denk, Melissa, suggestion, hoe kom laat ons anders plan maak, soos de vorige minister van de Valimosa het het gesê, want jy ondou jylle die hele sit, daar het vast vol die papier en die plastic en Valimosa het gemaakt om laat ons, ek meen is, ek weet dat nie jylle department, ek meen om te doen met some of the environmental affairs en so some of the plan om plastic as jy iets koop in die vinkke.
Dat is het al lang. A point of order. Now, I think we should stick on the presentation in order to save time.
Okay.
Other issues can follow later, maybe one-on-one with the minister. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Miriam? Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister and the Deputy. It's a pity the deputy minister has to leave. I think we should really look into the question of the performance agreements of officials. Because we can talk until we go gray and blue. But if there is no commitment in the team, there will be problems and gaps and communication gaps and everything will go wrong. We will have to look at ourselves in the mirror and look where do we go wrong. We will really have to have a strategy of looking whether that our officials are really communicating to our people on the ground. Are there really answers from them to the people? Because the questions that we are asking here come from constituencies. We can read the documents, but we mostly rely on the people and on what we are seeing on the ground. Minister, I have to inform you and the DG, he's not new in governance. He can be a new DG, but he's not new in governance. There are problems in the department from some of your officials, not all of them. Some of them do create problems for us, real problem for the country in terms of food security. And we will have to seek and find code and look where is the weakest link, and so that we can deal with the weakest links in the department. I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We shall ask the department to give.
And also a small explanation concerning the files, the red files, members. I am told by the committee section that they came on Friday, midday on Friday, when the members were already gone, and Monday.
Sorry, Chairperson, I think there's seriously a problem. These files were already available by the close of business on Thursday. Can you just check who handed it over? Can we in future have the person who receives the file sign and the time and the day put down when they receive the files? Because every time we bring the files early, there's a complaint that we haven't brought the file. So in future, can we just have a system where the person who receives the file signs day, time, I have received the files, so that we can have proof who received your files and who was responsible for not delivering the files to you. Thank you, Chair. So we have that system where the person who receives the files puts down the time and the day, especially the time and the date with the signature, I have received the files, so that we all have proof. And then we'll also circulate a register for the members to say on such and such a time we received it, so that we can see next to the date of delivery and the date of you receiving, what is the gap. Because there's a gap between when we deliver and when you receive. I've also asked that we have a system where we give it to you directly, and that there isn't an intermediary, any middle person, I will say middle money. But I also want to say that since Ashwin is there, things are improving. Things have improved. Thank you very much. I'll answer the questions once the DG has spoken.
Thank you, Minister. On the issue of food banks and DRR, I've asked Dr. Sisters to comment on that.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, the question relating to the four food banks, the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry is part of the Integrated Food Security and Nutrition Task Team, and this task team consists of Social Development, Department of Health, Basic Education, Rural Development Land Reform, the DTI, Economic Development and Public Works. This task team, as a multi-sectoral nature food security, makes sure that the issues under food security, and with particular the Social Development Department, brought to the table and signed an MOU with Food Bank South Africa, which is driven by the private sector and NGOs. Agriculture, what we have done here is just capitalized on the already existing distribution channels, their logistics and infrastructure network, in order to get fresh produce onto the market and to get our smallholder farmers to link up with this existing network of infrastructure and distribution in order to sell their fresh produce through the schools or the hospitals in the rural and most outlying areas of South Africa. And the four food banks in question is the ones in Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg and Port Elizabeth. But it is solely driven because the Social Department has signed the MOU with Food Bank SA and not the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Thank you.
Professor, I think that clarifies the matter. That's why it finds it in our report. And then, again, on the issue of maize surplus and honourable members, we know that it is actually perverse to be in a country where there's surplus maize and then there are poor people, hungry people. That is perverse. But in solving the problem, we need a sustainable solution to the problem and not to jump to the problem because it's a perverse, it's something that we cannot accept. Okay? We think that we're working on a long, on a sustainable solution to the problem, and there's a task team on it. One of the members of the task team is Dr. Fidel Zaspoken. Their work, which we're doing in collaboration with the Brazilians, who have got more experience on this, because they have eradicated hunger in 8 years under Lula's government. We have asked them to help us solve the problem, to think with us. We are saying to honorable members, at the beginning of next year, we will come to you with a plan. That's all I can say. Shortcuts of buying maize from the commercial farmers, I don't think it's going to help anyone. So we are trying to come up with a proper, well-thought-out plan. And I said to the previous briefing that what's the space, I'm still saying the same thing. We will come in by February, the team should have completed this work. We're not doing it alone. We're doing it with other countries to help us meet, it's called institutional changes. If you want the maize that smallholders are producing to be bought by people, old age pensioners, who've got the money to buy it, how are we going to do that? If you want to have what are called people's restaurants, okay, that are going to gain the market for smallholder farmers, how is that going to be done? Now, this is not something that you do it in a month's time or so. There's a team on it. So I don't want, as I said, I do not want to talk things here and make promises. We will come with you with a plan. We're working on it. So that's all I want to say on the matter. On the issue of the land bank, and I think that Honorable Abraham is correct. If the land bank has to borrow money or lend money, it cannot do that. It cannot operate in the normal way. What we are hoping for, Honorable Abraham, is that some of the money that we are putting in, definitely, because we are trying to put money in the land bank, the cash money will be organized by them. Okay? Even this money that is coming from the treasury, we would want to negotiate very firmly with them that part of it was the ring fence for smallholder farmers. Okay? The money that we are trying to get from other countries, from China, etc., we are only doing that for smallholder farmers. They were negotiating with the people for it. Now, so they cannot use that money to improve the efficiency and make money. No, we want that money to be put aside for that. Okay? So that would be our view on the money. And because about a billion of that money will be coming from the department. That is, if we get the go-ahead. Right now, we don't even have honorable problems. A go-ahead from people who are serving the court in government. So that will restrict us a little bit. Okay? But once that is gone, we want that money. Because if we go ahead with it, it will change how the provincial government works. Because they won't be managing projects. No. They will be working with ordinary farmers, planning with them. Because they won't have any space to be managing projects. They will represent the extension officers, do the real work, plan production, do all those kinds of things. We want to relieve them from administrative problems to do mobilization propaganda to smallholders that there's money, you go, this is the way offices, so you are recomposing how government is working, but there are still certain administrative steps that have to go through. Definitely on the cost money, but I'm hoping that the minister is more on top of this 3 billion than myself. Because it was something that the Minister of Treasury has not gone. We still have got to have a proper briefing from Treasury around what are the plans at 12 billion and also 3 billion. So I am hoping that of that 3 billion will be ring-fenced, or at least half of it will be ring-fenced for smallholder farmers, because that's and available cheap. So that's where we're directing things. Once we put that hedge, then we can hit it up if we're not working. But right now, we must sort that problem, and so the money is there. It's not there yet. Okay? That institutional mechanism is there. And then, if that's not working, then you will have every right to hit it up. But we will now be ready to implement that. I think that's basically the key things that they put. Maybe some comment on that one. Thank you.
Sorry, sir, regarding the land bank issue, is very, very vital. Can I just ask a question?
Jefferson, do I understand from the DG that this 3 billion rand that is to be ring-fenced, that part of this money will be some of the cost money that the department will be making available?
Right.
Secondly, Chair, can can I know that as of now, at the moment, there is no plan on the table as to how people can access loans out of this capitalization that has been announced? A third question on that, chairperson, is where does a developing farmer, it's already getting late for them, who want to plant grains in the summer rainfall area, where does that person who does not own the farm is leased by the state, by rural development or whatever other state agency, where does that person go to now to get some input cost funding? That is the issue at the moment.
Okay. The 3 billion rand over 3 years, okay? That one, we still have got to meet with Treasury about it. As I said, I'm doing it open. The minister is more on top of this than myself. Okay. It came out in the medium term thing with the Minister Franklin Gordhan. That I don't want to comment on that one. What I'm saying is that on that one, I will definitely negotiate that a portion of that is available for smallholder farmers cheaply. That commitment I'm making, that I'll definitely make the negotiations around that. What I can talk on is the almost billion rand that is CASP money. Okay? That I can comment on and say that we want all of that money to be put and made available to smallholder farmers. The problem we're having, honorable members, is that those who have to concur for us to do this have not yet concurred. They have rejected our proposal, to put it crudely. But I don't want to say who, because I don't want it to be in the news. Yeah. Yes. Now, I can talk to you, but I want to lobby you to also lobby them, by the way. So I want to talk to you after this meeting, to tell you who. So that one, we're clear that one will be put aside, immediately we can go ahead. And as I said, this will then reconfigure the road of, and tomorrow, by the way, I'm going to make a quote. Tomorrow at 9:30, I'm meeting all the HODs of the provinces tomorrow on this issue, because we want them to be coherent with one word, one voice on it. And we have already quoted support of 70% of the provinces in the country on this one-stop shop. And we've been working on it for more than a year. Okay. So these things, I mean, you've got to remember that test battles, there are all sorts of things. Because we're trying to take money that was used by problems. We're saying, put it in one kit so that it's available in volume so that it can be lent out cheaply and the less administrative hurdles on it. The only thing we're saying on the availability of this money, on this 1 billion that I can talk on, is that we will only ask people for two things. Okay? There's a risk in about two things, mainly. One, if you want money from the land bank, please come to us with a clear plan. Don't have to be a detailed plan. Just tell us that we want a report from your extension office that says what you are talking about, you're thinking can work. That's the first thing. Must be signed by the extension officer. And two, that there's a market for it. Those are the two things. That is to be. I know that there are other risks associated with it. We just have to cover everything. But for now, we're working with that. We will improve other insurance issues as we move. But those are the two things. So on that one, once we get the go ahead, okay, from this department that is skilled beyond the door, then we'll be running that one. So now on the farmers that have to plow now, okay, we are meeting with them in oversight either this coming Monday when we have got a MINMEC here, okay. But we know about 156 of them that have come through the agri-SA process who want to be supported. But we are saying to them, we're not going to give them a grant. We will lend them the money. They must pay it back. Because this issue of grants, for me, is not a sustainable way of solving development challenges. So, that's the answer to you, Mr. Abdul. Thank you.
Yeah, person, this means that the process is not finalized. And therefore, you know, the planting season is already underway. By the time something happens, the planting season will be over. If you look at mere logistics, it will be over. So we will not be able to help those people this season. I can't see it happening. But you are still going to meet them. Thereafter, there must be negotiations. And you see, chairperson, this is our problem. As we have other sister departments that don't come to the party, and there is nobody in government that can say, listen, thou shalt do this. And until we have that, where departments cannot have their own agendas, they must come to the party. Unfortunately, Chair, with the best will in the world, I'm prepared to put it for you in black and white. There will be no money available for those poor developing farmers to do any planting. I can't see it happen. The DG has already told us what the process is.
We want to respond directly because there's Mr. Pitoy, Honorable Pitoy, that has been noted. Thank you.
You see, we had the solution that would have obviated the concerns of Honorable Platan. But because these smallholder farmers came to us through a reputable organization, I cannot mention it, which is an organized organization of farmers. That organization wants us to do things in a way that will make money in the process. So what we had as a solution, an efficient one, is being told by farmers, not by us. And maybe Dr. Mashaba, don't mention the organization, you can tell them what we've done. Because we were trying to obviate all of them, but it is the farmers who have blocked what we put on the health department on how to obviate the problem of farmers, not us. It's them, because someone wants to make a quick money to solve the problem of the farmers, but lose the profit in the process. But that, again, that's not us, it's someone else.
Okay, thanks, Gigi, and thanks, Chairperson, and also thanks, Minister. Yeah, there was a meeting held with this organization. Just because, you know, the minister has, you know, embarked on a program, as you are aware, of mechanization and also the input support. So that process has been managed by the ALC. So when we discussed the issue of supporting these farmers, we indicated that there's a, you know, process ongoing now to sort of procure seeds, inputs and fertilizers. And we can take the 157, you know, farmers and include them in that tender. But this organization refused and said that, you know, they've negotiated deals with the banks, with the input suppliers and all those. So they want us, you know, government to give them a guarantee in writing that will subsidize the input by 40%. And we said, you know, that's not possible. It's going to take a long time. What we have now is the seeds and the fertilizers that can be supplied for this season. Which we're asking them for the quantity so that, you know, it can go through the procurement process. But they refuse that. So they are coming now to the top management of the department to explain why are they refusing the offer that we are giving them now as a department through this minister's program of input supply support services.
The issue is that Chairperson are complex.
This is a complex. Thank,
yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to apologize. I tendered my apology to Ashwin through my secretary. There was an accident on the road, and I'm sorry, I was 3 hours on the road. I'm very sorry to have missed the first part. But I wish to concentrate on the part that I'm here. And when I look at this overview about the maize surplus situation, it does describe the situation to a certain extent, but there is no implementation plans or deadlines on the task teams. That is one thing that bothers me. I think the department could not blame us for being skeptical. And one gets the idea that the department is treading water here. It is a year now that this problem has been developing. I remember it from the previous budget time already. And we're nitpicking here about 100 farmers here, 100 farmers there, but this is not, I think we must have a bigger picture here. You talked about, Gigi, you talked about Brazil. I must tell you that it's a pity you missed one of the lectures I attended at one of these places about Brasilia, how they turned around their country in less than a decade. But One of the things that came out of it is that the agriculture is doing so good because they have a very big commercial farms, many run by families, other by commercial by companies. So that is one of the aspects that we have to keep in mind when you get to that. But now, the real problem that we're dealing here with the maize surplus are not being addressed. in this, and that is the cost of producing it. Now, what I see here is that the maize production in South Africa is in big trouble. I mean, if farmers, whether it's South African farmers or Zambian farmers, if they are now producing, and we can't export to them anymore, and they've got the rainfall, and they've got the deep soils, and they've got better land to do it, and they've got less other input costs, they are going to put us out of business. I don't know if everybody realizes it, but if you put the maize farmers out of business, then you're putting rainbow chickens out of business, and they're supplying more than 60 or 70% of chicken and poultry in this country. Now, so when you start importing those maize, I mean, what's going to happen in a decade when these people can't export to you anymore? Because then you really have a problem. Then you have starvation. So what I think is we are not addressing the real problem here. We're not saying, or the department can't say, the trade and industry can't say, how are we going to keep the farmers on the land to produce at a lower cost? And then I ask the question, it seems that everybody thinks that, or some people think that the small farmers can produce cheaper. I understand the need for small farmers to produce it and locally consumption. I understand that. And if it can work, it would be wonderful. But that is also a problem. If they cannot produce cheaper, then it's a real problem. So I have a few questions that I have to ask with that background, and that is, If the minister or the department has discussed the maize situation with SA Grain in depth, because we've got a letter here that they wrote and that they point out a few things, and did the two parties come to an agreement on a strategy and action plan? Because if you're not engaging with SA Grain in depth with this, then we have a big problem. I don't see it in the pieces presented to us. Then the other one is I see that on the Tunisians and Algerians, and they were not interested. We couldn't conclude anything. But I want to know whether if we could conclude any agreements on prices and quantities with Egypt and China. Because if it's not, this all seems like hot air and remote possibilities. And if that's not going to come to light, we can't build a business on dreams. We have to build a business on reality, and we're running out of time. We saw how quickly China turned against us on the wool issue. Now, really, can we trust these people? If we don't have an agreement, and they say something, there's some mold in the maize, they cancel it. You're at their mercy. Now, the other thing is the cheap credit. We have to ask ourselves, how cheap is it going to be? It's important, okay? Now, were due diligence done on the rates that will be charged? I mean, at what rate will the Chinese Development Bank supply credit? And at what rate will the land bank lend it out? What collateral will be required by China? I mean, they can't just, there must be some collateral. So these are serious questions we have to ask, and I'm afraid we just skimmed over it, and if we don't get these answers soon, it's treading water on this issue. And then the last thing I just want to mention around the food banks, I'm glad that we had some answers on that one, because it answered most of my questions how it works. But we have to look at, and I think it doesn't have to be answered now, but we definitely have to look at a time when they can. You can give us perhaps on paper how this works. Who produces, how many people produces, who processes packs and transport, who stores it, who buys at what price in relation to to supermarket prices, who qualifies, and how it is determined by whom to receive the food. These are details that I don't expect now, but certainly things that we need to be aware of. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Dudoy. Over to the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
I think that actually the interesting thing of the negotiations or the discussions we've had with the Grain South Africa is that initially when the crisis came out, they came to talk to us. We set up a team to work with them. The meeting that I was referring to, the NAMC meeting and Competition Commission meeting, was a meeting that was co-convened or in which they were critical players in. However, in the course of these discussions, they came back to us and said that, look, we are going to look at the market solution. We think we can solve this. You don't have to help us. That's what the Grain South Africa said to us. Okay? Yes, this is successful. This is so. But then again, the problem persisted. And we've continued to say, okay, let us continue to work for them, even if they think that they do not need us. And we are not sleeping if we were to tell what we're doing, but we don't want to make announcements here until they're clear. We're working very, very hard. There are people who are harnessed on this question all the time, trying to secure a market for the grain from South Africa. So we are working with them closely. Okay, they can attest to this. You can invite them here. They came to us. They then came back to say, no, we don't need you. And then they came back to us saying, okay, we think we'll need you. I remember the DDG was working on this thing, was a big memorial, and I used to say to him, do they need us now? Because it has been like that, but we have been together on this. One of the things in the discussions that which the Competition Commission raised with us was that what we need to understand is what drives the maize economy in South Africa. Why is it not competitive? Okay? What are the problems? Is it input costs? So even the Competition Commission is working, there's a task team in it to look at the cost drivers of maize, to go to the structural things that you're talking about. So these things are all in the radar. Okay? We're just sharing with you the critical issues that will we're sharing with you. Well, we've got to be elaborating on it and everything. So we're moving on this. We hope we'll secure the market. They are promising, but again, I will not go there. Now, I think, though, Honorable Tutoi, we will assist all these industries in our country, but we cannot be held responsible for the problems of capitalism. Capitalism, got supply and demand, distinction sometimes. For instance, one of the things, if we were to allow a proper capitalist solution of the problem, that's a market solution of it, we would say there's oversupply of maize, so let the market be flooded, and that would kill the industry. But that would be capitalism. Capitalism was a free market, so it's either you can sell it or you cannot sell it. And it has nothing to do with the state. But despite these problems of capitalism, which one has no responsibility for, but one helping, okay? We will continue, but we cannot be. It cannot be told there's a problem of government if the market system is not working. That has nothing to do with government. The market system is a market system. Okay, it's about market, but buyers and sellers. There's nothing to do with that. But because we've got the national interest to safeguard, despite the views of business, we will help as we are doing. So I thought that it's important to give that proper context on responding to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think just before you take another round of questions, if a business person plants a lot of potatoes and that business person can't sell the potatoes, that business person can't turn around and blame government if you can't sell the potatoes or you don't have a market. But as the DG said, government is not washing its hands and saying, we are not assisting and we are not taking an interest, because we know we have a national interest to safeguard this industry. We do not want the maize industry to go the same way that the wheat industry went. So we are then intervening as a government. We could have washed our hands and said, this is your problem. But we are intervening as a government to assist these farmers. Unfortunately, a number of these negotiations are so sensitive that you cannot just spill it out in the public. Especially, you cannot go to the media and spell out the details of these memoranda. And we know these are public fora. So once we are done with the negotiations, we can talk about it.
But the sensitivity around negotiations is that the Chinese government reads about it. Sometimes it doesn't come out too well in the media, or it gets twisted a bit. And then it takes our negotiations 10 steps back. So once again, we are done with the details of the finance for the Chinese Development Bank, and we're also done with IFAD, that's the International Fund for Agriculture Development. We will be able to give you the details. The other problem is that we have added on a lot of information. The main item is the surplus of maize. But with the surplus of maize, we have gone in like an octopus into a lot of areas. So those areas, as we pick them up, we're coming back and giving more and more detail. Like now we're coming back, we're giving you more detail on IPAP2, we're giving you more detail on the growth strategy document of the government. So as we go along, we are recognizing that there's more and more meetings that we need to have with you. But then it does also have a lot of clashes. Like tomorrow I have to be at the, today I have to be at the economic cluster of cabinet. So there's an economic cluster of cabinet, very important documents are being discussed, very important matters which have a direct bearing on agriculture are being discussed. So again, you know, do I go to a cabinet meeting or do I come here? Tomorrow, a meeting of the portfolio committee has been called again for tomorrow. There's a meeting on fisheries in the portfolio committee. But tomorrow on a Wednesday is a cabinet day. So do I go to cabinet or do I come to the portfolio committee meeting? So I'm damned if I don't come here. You have a problem if I don't come here. But I'm also damned if I don't go to cabinet. In cabinet I'm expected to be because of the president. So yes, we are running a number of meetings. We send invitations, and they also we send invitations to the portfolio committee. And they end up in one office. And from that office, they don't get distributed further to members. So again, invitations get sent. We realize members don't get it. I'm again asking that the invitations get delivered to members directly, and that members then sign for the invitation. I've even brought the messenger to this meeting so that he identifies each and every member and goes to that member with correspondence, files, and whatever correspondence we need to give. Grain SA, yes, they first thought they didn't need us. They said they don't need politicians to help them. Then they recognized they need us. But throughout the problem of the maize surplus, we have been consistently working with Grain SA. They've also been part of the delegation that we took to China. Mr. Neil Ferreira is almost in contact with us on a weekly basis. The rest, I'm sure, the DG has already answered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, the Honourable Minister. Are there any follow-ups, Mr. Dutoy?
Thank you for the answers. It's more clarity. I just want to ask the Minister to have a look at the tariffs again. Last year, it was about a year ago when the industry approached DTI, and the Minister of the DTI, I think he sat on it a bit long. The Minister will recall that at the budget speech, I reminded her of the planting season for maize, for wheat in Western Cape. I would just implore the Minister to please end into discussions with the DTI as soon as possible so that people can have an idea of what they're going to do. The other thing is that, yes, the market system does present problems, especially when overseas countries, strong countries, are subsidizing their farmers. But do we accommodate this market system, or do we produce food on another system? Maybe we should have a debate on that sooner or later. But we must be able to keep farmers on the farms, or we have to take them off. And the state must take responsibility for food production. So maybe we should have a debate on that sometime. Thank you.
Thank you.
Minister, do you want to respond to...
I think those statements are gladly accepted, and we are working with DTI as well as economic development to speed up the processes, the import and export tariffs, and I think that we'll see a greater understanding. There's also a greater understanding with DTI, and you've seen that they're now speaking a lot more about cattle feed, crop feed, and agro-processing. So those comments are well taken. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. In our agenda now, number two was going to be stud book. I don't know whether we can go into that quickly because we are left with 45 minutes. What I think will fall out is number five because the minutes are not yet ready, members. Thank you. Over to the DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Dr. Tana is here to present on the stud book.
Dr. Jana, the floor is yours.
Change your name, Doctor. Pronunciation, I think.
Honorable Minister, honorable members, good afternoon. And I will take you through the presentation in terms of stud book as we've been requested to. No, we don't have a hard copy.
We'll hold that in the file, remember.
This was in the file we gave you the first time.
The blue one,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. We asked that members bring those files along as well.
Yes, Minister.
But we will make copies of this available now.
Okay. The message was conveyed to the members.
We'll make copies of this available as well.
Yes, they do have the two files.
Honourable members, I'll basically take you through the process of, in terms of the livestock recording and improvement scheme. And as an introduction, livestock contributes 53% to the GDP from agriculture in South Africa. There's 13.5 million cattle. And excuse me, that was in total, and about half of that is in the hands of black farmers. However, most of the livestock is produced in semi-arid areas, which requires investment in innovation and strategies so that we improve the adaptability and the productivity. Recording and genetic evaluation, in fact, facilitates the identification of productive animals and helps us increased productivity, as the Honourable Member had earlier asked or spoken about in his question time. In terms of the recording scheme, all registration and recording has to be registered on the on what's referred to as INTIGES, and that is the Integrated Animal Recording Scheme. This, in terms of the Animal Improvement Act of 1998, in section 15.3A, states that all animals that are registered or there's recording done, that information has to be recorded onto INTIGES. The other issue around the scheme is that the minister may establish schemes, and the rules of the schemes are in consultation with the body that is responsible for maintaining the INTIGES. I think these three issues are critical in terms of the way we look at the schemes as we go forward. The schemes were moved to the ARC Cabinet and members of the Executive Council MECs for Agriculture in the nine provinces in 1995 moved the National Animal Recording and Improvement Scheme to the ARC. And the South African government, through the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, funds the ARC to implement these schemes, the NAS. In terms of the recording, which is the integers, that was also moved to the ARC. The Department of Agriculture had entrusted the development of an electronic animal registration system to SA Stadbook, a private organization dealing with animal registration. But after a cost of about 25 million, the efforts did not yield the desired outputs. As a rescue plan, we bought an off-the-shelf system called IRIS, and that was to ensure that we have a recording scheme. The Department of Agriculture then transferred the management of integers to the ARC in 2005. And prior to that, integers was managed jointly by the ARC and SA Stadbook. I've said that the minister may announce the different schemes, and there are, in fact, five declared schemes. The declared schemes are the National Beef Recording and Improvement Scheme, the Dairy Recording and Improvement Scheme, the Small Stock Recording and Improvement Scheme, the National Pig and Poultry Recording Scheme, Kanamapatso Yadihoma Scheme, and so those are the five schemes that we're talking about. All of these schemes, the aim of it is to make sure that we improve the production. So it's beef, dairy, small stock, pigs, and the last scheme is in fact a beef scheme for resource poor farmers. Just as a background to animal registration and recording, there are, in fact, seven animal registering authorities in South Africa. They have to register with the registrar, who's at the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and for them to be able to issue certificates of pedigree. So in lay terms, these are really the birth certificates for the animals. And the scheme, the authorities are SA Stadbook, Holstein Breed Society, Santa Gertrude's Breed Society. They all do the parentage, birth, and ownership recording for stud farmers. The other leg of it, there are other four registering authorities for the Brahmins, Brangas, Limousine, who also do performance recording with a separate company called Breed Plan. So what we have here is we register the births, and the second leg of this is, in fact, to record the performance. And as explained earlier, it was basically as you get your birth certificate, when you go to the clinics to measure the weight and height of the children, that's the recording part of this particular one. All of this then has to be captured on a database, an integrated database. The ARC itself does performance recording for all interested farmers, and birth recording for non-stud farmers. So the other organizations do birth recording, but for stud farmers. So here the ARC does the commercial farmers and other people. Here's just a schematic of what I've presented. What you have got is on the side that says role players. You've got the different societies that I took you through. You've got Breed Plan, which is not a society, but an organization that does the registration. They also do animal performance. They're in fact a company that's based in Australia. The ARC does some birth registrations as well as animal performance. So that's the landscape in which we're basically talking. What the ARC plans to do with this scheme, and one of the critical elements is, in fact, to create an advisory body. The advisory body would be made up of the different registering authorities, different breed societies, together with provincial departments and other departments such as rural development and land reform. All of those people that have an interest in making sure that we improve animal production, together with the commodity interest groups such as the Black Farmers Association and others, we're basically saying that the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, who are the custodians of the policy and mandates, and the ARC would be the operations. We would have members of the advisory committee who would then advise us in terms of both the animal registration as well as the recording. But the critical element of this would be that all of this data is in fact kept on the integer system, which is integration of registration and performance data as well as editing functions. In addition, or at the same time, the five schemes would be looked at and continue to work to be done in the five schemes. So here's the details, just in point form, the establishment of an advisory body, the implementation of Section 15.3A of the Act, which states that all registration and recording data in South Africa has to be entered on this system, which has been abbreviated as integers. One of the major issues that people are worried about is that with Breedplan, as an Australian company, that those people that are recording and registering with Breedplan would take their information and move it offshore to Australia. But the Act, in terms of 15.3A, mandates that anybody that does registration or recording has to have the data supplied to people that are managing integers. We've spoken about the extension. We've also, in terms of the proposal, saying that the support that we give to the black farmers should be expanded and become much more holistic. The last major point in terms of the scheme is that we're looking at the inclusion of commercial producers as expanding the scheme. And these are operational issues that we're thinking of increasing, is the electronic data capturing of the system, the capturing of the new entrants, and in terms of the Act where the data has to be stored on integers, we are in discussion with the department in terms of the relocation of integers. At the moment, integers is being run by SA Studbook on behalf of the ARC and are being paid for that. The issue that we have at hand is that SA Studbook have put a plan on the table, and the point that I'm going to go through now is really the crux of their plan. Firstly, they are talking about the consolidation of registration and recording. So the SA Studbook activity that they do for most of the different breeds, but as I indicated, there are seven registering authorities. So they are one of those seven. Their proposal is to integrate this with the ARC's recording and provide a one-stop shop. The idea is that the ARC stops the recording and would move that over to SA Studbook, and that the state would therefore not have an active role to play other than maybe an oversight role. But it's a one-stop shop that they provide, that they're looking at. They are also, in terms of taking over the activities, the plan refers to the four schemes would be run. This would exclude the Kanan Mapotso Yadihoma scheme, and that in their plan, they talk about having a separate contract with the department. So the scheme that deals with black farmers and emerging farmers would not be part of what they have in their plan. They will want to have this as a separate contract with the department. They would house integers at SA Studbook, and as I said, in terms of the Act, all registering authorities and recording authorities have to submit their data to integers. So what we have here is SA Studbook asking for the other associations like the Brahmin to send their data for SA Studbook to record, and therefore does not have any independence. It is competitors sending their data to Studbook, Here again, it would not be a one-stop shop because the Brahmin society and the others are using a different recording association. The other issue that SA Studbook have in their plans, and they had said that they wanted to improve efficiencies, and there would be a reduction in staff from 40 to 42 from 107. The ARC at the moment has 107 staff. SA Studbook plan to use 42 staff, and there's a reduction of 60. I would remind members, honourable members, that at the ARC's presentation of his annual report, the issue was raised, and Studbook have raised it with us, in the sense that they said that we have not filled position A, B, C, D, and E at the different sites. And they had about five positions that we did not fill. So from the 107, we have not filled five. What they're planning to do, however, is to reduce it from 107 to 42. So I'm not sure how that would work when they feel that not filling five posts was as important. However, the sting in the tail to this plan is that the 60-odd people that SA Studbook would not take over, the ARC should take them over and keep them on their books without and utilize them as they please so we can continue to pay their salaries. And I'm not sure how the ARC would use those extra 60 people. They also, in terms of the recording, one of the major activities, the recording of animals is done in different phases. There's A, B, C, and D. The major phase is phase C. According to their business plan, they would outsource phase C. So the biggest activity in the plan would be outsourced. The net funding, according to the scheme, they would come back to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and require $15.6 million to run the schemes. And that was on 2009-2010 finances. So 2010-2011, the inflation and those increases would have to be done. Secondly, the schemes would only include, as I've already pointed out, the four schemes, not the support to the black farmers. That would be under a separate contract. The integers is also looked at as a separate contract and not part of this $15.6 million. On the basis of that, we have, as ARC, put forward that we would be rejecting this SA Studbook plan. At the moment, we have set up a meeting to talk to them on Thursday and inform them of the conclusions that we have come to. We have done this. We presented this plan to the department last week on Monday. And with the department, we have agreed on a number of different issues. We said that we would establish the advisory board and provide all stakeholders with a voice. The commitment is that we would either attempt to have a workshop or where all the different stakeholders are called on by the end of November, and if that's not possible, early in January is when we would have the stakeholder workshop. We would also, as all SA data will be captured on integers. Now, the problem there is that at the moment, integers sits with SA Studbook physically. We have the responsibility, but they physically sit with it. For us to ensure that the Act is fully complied with, all farmers will that do registering and recording will have to send their data to integers. However, we feel that at this stage it is not appropriate for us to insist that that happens because all that data will go to SA Studbook, and we fear that there might be a challenge to us as government from the other authorities that have broken away from Studbook to say that you are asking us to send our data to our competitors. So the process would be to move integers from SA Studbook in Bloemfontein up to Irene, and then ensure that the Act is followed and advised through the registrar, advise all the other registering authorities that they have to send the data. They can send their data to Australia, That's their right, but they will have to make sure that that data is also captured in South Africa. That was one of the major problems that SA Stadbook had, was that the societies were leaving them and moving into Breedplan. And if we don't do anything, all the data will go to Breedplan and therefore to Australia. We're saying that the Act allows us and compels us to make sure that we collect all of that data. We're also saying the schemes are being expanded to include more resource-poor farmers and commercial farmers. There's a greater role for provincial departments of agriculture, and we are saying that through this, there should be an improvement in wealth generation and poverty alleviation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Chana. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have listened to the presentation. I want to thank Dr. Gina for the presentation. But you see, Chairperson, this business of stud breeding is a very complex one. And I think I need to, I don't think that the presentation tells the ordinary person what stud breeding is. If you want to introduce previously disadvantaged people into stud breeding, it is not going to happen overnight. I know what I talk about. It's not going to happen overnight. I want to give you a little example, Chairperson. Here I have the latest Langbouwweek blood. And here is a beautiful Bonsmara bull. Now if you look at that bull, you'll say, "Ay maru musle le lenkunzile." But this bull has got top genetics in it. It's a stud bull. And you know who bought it for 375,000 rand? The Honorable Penwell Maduna. Stud breeders in the developing community cannot be made. They develop over a period of time. And what you do, Chairperson, is you first have a few animals and you play around with those animals, ordinary animals. And then you develop a flair that, no, but I want to go into the market of producing top quality genetics and bulls and that sort of stuff. And that takes years before you get there. So I want to make it very clear, Chairperson, that there is in this document that was presented to us in our blue file, in which it says, a point of concern is that even after 16 years of democracy, the proposal makes no reference of how previously disadvantaged groups will be represented in the current organization, let alone be part of a proposed one. Now, you get into stud breeding before you become a member of a breeder society. At the age of 19, Chairperson, I was a breeder of stud Jersey cattle. And you can go and look at the records. The prefix that was allocated to me is Pine Villa. It is still there. But then, Chairperson, I realized that stud breeding is not for everybody. You have to keep records. When a calf is born, you have to measure the weight of that calf. And then it's a process. Not every developing farmer wants to be a stud farmer. But I can also tell you, Chair, that there are a number of people from the disadvantaged community who are today stud breeders. And amongst them are Cyril Ramaphosa, who breeds stud borans, an animal that comes from Kenya. You have Duncan Serapelwane, who is one of the stud Bonsmara breeders whose first stud bull that he sold was now in October.
one of the first ones. He did not start off as a stud breeder. You start off with a small Anyana mixtures, and then you graduate into breeding stud animals. So, Chairperson, I don't buy this idea that no provision is made for disadvantaged people. It's a specialized field, and whoever wants to be in that field, nothing, no legislation in this country and no organization can stop them from getting in. I got into it in 1959 when I was when the Breed Society, the Jersey Cattle Breeders Society, did not allow people of color to become members of the Jersey Cattle Breeders Society. I was the one that fought with them and became a breeder. Chairperson, you know, there are many sides to a story. They say that there are always two sides to a story. Your side and my side. But I say there are three sides. It's your side, my side, and the truth in between. I believe, Chairperson, that there's only one way. And I advise Dr. Mwepuli that the ARC should have a meeting of all role players in the stud stock industry. And that they should have a form of consensus and then come out of that meeting with something. Our problem, Chairperson, is that we want to impose on everybody. We don't want to take the total industry with us and arrive at a plan which will work for the industry. It is not what is good for government only that counts. It must be good for everyone. And my advice here, Chairperson, is that hear the other side. Audi ade partem. And that you can only do if you have everybody around the same table. We have failed our people in this country to make them commercial farmers in livestock. We have failed. Let's be honest. How far have we succeeded? We haven't. Let's call a spade a spade. We need to create of our subsistence cattle farmer a better commercial farmer. That should be our first step. So that we can create better meat, better quality, and so that we can arrest this 55,000 kilograms of meat that we are importing. And Chairperson, this is a very highly sophisticated industry. The word integers, Dr. Gina must spell out what does that mean. There is what we call a best linear unbiased prediction, BLUP figures. These are figures that come out of performance testing. We need to, you then base, at the moment as a commercial cattle farmer, I buy not stud bulls, but I buy bulls that are suitable for giving me a good calf, a better weaning weight. I used to wean bull calves at 7 months, at 180 kilogram roughly. I'm now weaning them at 205 kilograms. Now that 25 kilogram extra, that's the weaning weight, is what our people would be benefiting if they have better genetic material to breed the animals. And umpteen times I have told the department, why don't we take some of our young people in the rural areas who are unfortunately without work but who has a matric certificate, who may have a flair for animals, a flair for livestock, and equip them with a scooter, a flask, and in that flask, Chairperson, there's nitrogen, and there is semen, animal semen. And equip that person with the ability to be able to check out whether a cow is on heat, and tell the local folks how to check that out, and assist in developing the quality of the animals that we have, particularly in the old communal areas. We don't do that. This has been singing here for the last 10 years. I haven't seen that happening. Yes, we provide them with bulls. I don't know when last did the department provide bulls. But what I do know, Chairperson,
is that some of the members of Stadbook South Africa, as well as the other organizations, are providing bulls in my hometown of Vrede. There is a Newman family that provides Drakensberger bulls to the local community in order to improve their stock. Now we want to go along and one-sidedly decide that these are our recommendations. I say, Chairperson, bring the total industry together. It's not only cattle, it is sheep, it is goats, it is pigs, it is even ostriches, it's alpacas, it's a number of types of animals whose genetic value has been improved over the years in South Africa as a result of the hard work of the stud breeder. And it is not a simple and an easy one. So, Chairperson, I am talking out of experience, not that I'm an expert, but anybody that knows animal breeding, animal farming, will tell you, Mr. Maduna did not pay 375,000 rand for the looks of this bull. He paid it for the breeding values of this bull. Because he believes that he will be getting out of this bull offspring that will improve the quality of his herd. And that is what it is all about, Chair. And I'm extremely disappointed that we don't get the total industry together, discuss with them, get their buy-in, and then move forward. And I want to warn you, Chairperson, this is a grave mistake that we are making. If you want to operate on the basis of top-down, you are going to make mistakes. It is not only with regard to stud breeding and stud animals, but also with regard to everything else that you want to achieve. If you want to achieve the results that you want in the new growth path, bring all the people together, let them buy in, and then you will get the support of everyone. I agree that there's a lot of goodwill outside, but what we are busy doing is we are pushing that goodwill away. No, we must do this in secret. We must do it our way. And that's a major mistake. And I want to repeat here, Chairperson, I advise Dr. Moafili that get the entire sector together and hammer out whatever the problem is. I was told that, yeah, but you know, the one society will not come there because the other one is there. But that's not our problem. We are a central government. We invite everybody. And those that want to stay at home, it's their business. Then they'll just be out of the party, that's all. But Chairperson, in heaven's name, let us start doing things right. My final shot. Dia Talawa in my constituency in Harrismith. There's a dairy project which was planned. I told the official that was working with a dairy project, my man, a dairy is not a plaything. First, you could see that you have a contract secured to supply the milk. The second thing you do is you see that you have your infrastructure. And then you see that you have a feed flow. A dairy cow, Chairperson, is like a baby. It must be fed on time if you want milk on time and in good quantities. And the last thing you do is you bring in the dairy animals. They must come last. And you know what happened there, Chair? They didn't look at the contract first. They didn't look at the infrastructure. They didn't look at the feed flow, but the animals are there. The cows are there. I saw them personally on the 5th of October. I greeted them all. And they all told me they are not good milkers. So, Chairperson, these are the kind of mistakes we make. And how much does a dairy cow cost today? 10, 12 grand a piece. There were 83 of them there. When I was there on the 5th of October, I was told that these animals arrived here on the 13th and 14th of September. And three of them have already died. You see, Chairperson, let us not do things in a wrong way. I told the official in charge, in God's name, don't make mistakes. And that's why we are critical. Because when we tell people that this is not the way to go, they go and do the opposite. Chairperson, I say it in conclusion. Get the entire animal breeding fraternity under one roof. If your organization does not have the money, I think agriculture should have something, let them sponsor it. If they don't have it, ask sponsors and put them under one roof and work out a plan which is acceptable to all. We should not just look at why have black people not been included? Why have this not been done? Why have that not been done? I'm telling you that the majority of my compatriots who happen to be black, like me, are not interested in having registered pedigree cattle. The majority. You have the exceptions, and they are successful. And let me also say that the government did not help those people. Enoch Mbele, who runs a dairy short on herd in my constituency, was not helped by the government originally. He started it on his own. So those people are successful because they wanted to do it. You can't force somebody to do something. It must be within you to want to do it. So, Chairperson, I again appeal. Get the entire fraternity under one roof before you decide what is good for the fraternity. Let them tell you what is good for them and let them give you the reasons. And if you feel you've got a better plan, argue your plan out with them. And don't come here with a plan telling us that this is what we are suggesting must be done. You are wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for this informative presentation. I first want to say what is disturbing me is that everybody is arguing government is not working. The department is not giving support. But at the end of the day, the very same government must give funding out of its coffers. So I really don't understand the logic. What I want to say, I really don't understand Statbook. I won't say I'm knowledgeable about Statbook. I will never say that from where I'm sitting. But I want to say that we would like and welcome the workshop so that all of us can come on board and be part and parcel of the workshop and give policy, direction, and policy of Polokwane. Because the Polokwane policy will direct us and include the rest of the disadvantage, which is really heart and soul loving the industry. Especially the disadvantaged who didn't have chance in the past to also come on board. I don't want to hear that emerging and black people. I don't understand. This African soil is our soil. So there is no one in heaven going to tell us, you can't do this, you can't go into that, you can't go do this. How? There is a set time for everybody. So as I say, disadvantage emerging small are going to have the chance to go into this business. But give me the knowledge, give me the information, give me a chance to have my input, give me a chance to also debate in that workshop so that I can understand where to am I directing this country. That's all I want to say. I won't take long or I won't even sit here and give you a lololo story that is not going to help us going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Paliso. Ngosi Sobukulu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I've been covered by what Abraham has said. Because my main concern was with regards to the most disadvantaged people who have not been exposed to these types of breeding livestock. So my focus was just on that. But fortunately, Mr. Abraham has taken it.
Thank you, Ngozi. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, and Honourable Members. I think we need to get a couple of issues straight.
what we're discussing here is not the breeding of stud animals. This proposal is for the recording and the registration to be done. The great advantages and the great strides we've made with recording have been made through the ARC, through government's funding of its infrastructure. So there are recording stations that government funds. This particular proposal purely states that now that recording must move to SA Studbook, not to the stud breeders, to SA Studbook. And what we're saying is that there are 7 registering authorities at SA in South Africa. SA Studbook is one of those registering authorities. The second issue, and what we debate and what we put a proposal on, and I apologize to the honorable member that we didn't go into the full recording and the full issues around the 5 different schemes. We concentrated on what the plan from SA Studbook was. And their plan was that ARC stops doing the recording, they would now do the recording. The farmer would continue to do his breeding, and the farmer would continue to do the work that they're doing. The second issue that they had raised, and which is what we're pointing out, is that the recording that they plan to do is for the 4 major schemes. There is a 5th scheme that is for the emerging farmer, and I think, Dr. Magalela, how many of those farmers are now in the official scheme?
On
the Dehoma scheme, and how many of those have been moved over to the beef recording scheme? So there's a scheme that we are working with over 1,000 farmers, and 40 of them have now, in a sense, graduated to the commercial beef recording scheme. So, again, and I take the point that we need to talk to the industry, and that is what we're proposing. Again, honorable member, one of the issues that have come up from SA Studbook was, please do not go into the, don't put this out as an advert in the newspaper that you're having the workshop. The moment that happens, the societies will leave and join BreedPlan. That's SA Studbook's advice to us. Our advice is that we want to go into the press. We want to invite all the role players so that everybody has a role to play to give the ARC and government advice as to how the scheme should work. All that we are saying is that the data that's recorded needs to be kept in a central place and that is independent from all the other registering authorities. I hope I've answered that. And in terms of the issue of the work of the emerging farmers, again, I'm not dealing with the program itself. All I'm dealing with is saying that SA Studbook, in their proposal, say that they will only deal with the 4 schemes. If the department wants them to deal with the emerging farmers, there must be a separate contract from this particular business plan that they propose. So my apologies that I did not go into detail on the whole breeding, and just that I concentrated purely on the proposal from SA Studbook. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chana. Gina, I'm sorry. Dr. Gina, I'm sorry for Miss. Now we are left with 9 minutes, and members must still go and eat, and everybody else. Now, I've got a small dilemma, but I hope the members will direct me. For tomorrow's meeting, there is this thing that the minister is having a cabinet meeting, which is very important, as you all know. Now, she was also expected to address us, the portfolio committee, at the MCM in the morning. There is DDG Silike who is in charge, so I don't know whether we continue or what do we say. Mama, can you
ask about what?
Sorry,
concerning, as you requested the minister, everything about fisheries. She was going to undergo that process.
I think if there is somebody who will represent the minister as we want how things should be presented to us, we can continue with the meeting without the minister and with the DDG. Right.
There is a suggestion on the table. Any second, anybody opposing?
Hear that proposal.
The proposal on the table is that there is a DDG who can do the presentation. So Honorable Pidiso is saying we can continue with the meeting.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. If the DG will be up to speed, if we have any questions that they cannot answer and we have for the minister, we can always ask her later. I was just thinking, you know, for her, the cabinet meetings must be terribly boring, so maybe she wants to get away from it.
So on that light, you will be getting the... 9 o'clock is the time to meet at 4 days in the morning tomorrow to take us to the social building where we were last time. Otherwise, I want to thank Dr. Gina. I want to thank the minister, the DG, and everybody from the department who came and shed light on us to our questions that we had. We have learned something. But I also want to thank the honorable members for their contribution in the process. I think the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Please, and it doesn't cover the things that cover.